True self-confidence comes from positive knowing rather than positive thinking. Your job is to develop the kind of unshakable self-confidence that makes you an unstoppable force of nature. Your job is to take every step possible to make yourself so positive that you become irresistible and able to accomplish any goal that you set your mind to. And one of the most important things you need is an absolute faith in your ability to overcome any adversity that the world can throw at you. Napoleon Hill said that persistence is to the character of man as carbon is to steel. He also said, before success comes in any man's life, he is sure to meet with much temporary defeat and perhaps some failure. When defeat overtakes a man, the easiest and most logical thing to do is to quit. That is exactly what the majority of men do. In reality, your persistence is your measure of your belief in yourself and your ability to succeed. If you absolutely believe, without question, that if you persevere long enough and hard enough, you will ultimately win through, then nothing will stop you. And when you build within yourself this absolute assurance, then virtually anything becomes possible for you. Robert Ringer, in his best-selling book, Million Dollar Habits, says that the most important of all the habits that lead to great achievement is what he calls the reality habit. I choose to call this the reality principle, and it's consistent with the experiences of men and women who have achieved greatness in almost every field. Happy, successful people are intensely realistic. They do not allow themselves the luxury of self-delusion. They face the world as it is rather than the way they wish it would be. They accept the unalterable facts of life as given, and they work and plan their activities around them. It's easy to feel good about yourself and to have high levels of self-confidence when everything is going well. But the true test of a man or a woman is when you can keep your head and continue to function when things seem to be falling down all around you and everyone else is discouraged and often blaming it on you. These are the times when you really show the kind of stuff you are made of. The business school at Stanford University has done extensive research into the qualities of a man or woman that mark him or her for advancement into the executive suite and ultimately to the position of a president and chief executive officer. After examining dozens of qualities, they were finally able to identify two qualities that were most representative of the superior person in terms of assuring that the organization under their control would continue to survive and thrive in a dynamic and competitive world. The first quality was the ability to perform as a member of a team and the ability to put together teams to accomplish common objectives. But the second quality was harder to measure, even though it was also absolutely indispensable for long-term, high-level success. This quality was the ability to function well in a crisis. Napoleon called this 4 o'clock in the morning courage, the kind of courage that is instantly available to a person woken up at that time who has no time to prepare mentally and emotionally for a crisis. He called this the rarest form of courage, and in his conclusion, very few people had it. In military terms, they call this being under fire. A question that all soldiers, sailors, and airmen wonder about is how they and others will perform under fire. They know that this is the ultimate test of character and training of an individual. Your self-esteem and self-confidence is closely tied to your deep inner feeling about your ability to be effective when faced with problems and difficulties that hit you like a punch in the solar plexus. It's your ability to pick yourself up from the mat and keep on swinging that is the real measure of what you're made of. One of my favorite poems is by Robert W. Service, and it's called The Quitter. There's a verse in that poem that goes like this. You're sick of the game. Well, that's a shame. You're young and you're strong and you're bright. You've had a raw deal. I know. But don't squeal. Buck up. Do your damnedest and fight. It's the plugging away that will win you the day, so don't be a piker, old pard. Just draw on your grit. It's easy to quit. It's the keeping your chin up that's hard. The quality of your entire personality is affected by how you deal with adversity and how well you keep your chin up. Successful and self-confident people are not those who don't have problems. They're merely those who deal with their problems in a different way from the average. B.C. Forbes, the founder of Forbes magazine, wrote that history has demonstrated that the most notable winners usually encounter heartbreaking obstacles before they triumphed. They won because they refused to become discouraged by their defeats. And so can you. No matter how well our parents protect us while we're growing up, sooner or later we face challenges and difficulties in our relationships, our work, and our other activities. Each time we face one of these external challenges, we have the choice of either responding positively and constructively or of letting it overwhelm us. If we choose deliberately to respond in a positive and constructive way, to keep our minds calm and cool and deal effectively with the inevitable problem, we learn and grow and become stronger. Our self-confidence goes up. Our belief in our ability to achieve our goals increases. Our self-esteem rises. We form a better self-image and we become more self-assured and optimistic. Every large company goes through the same cycle of challenge and response. If a small company is capable of rising to the inevitable setbacks and reversals it experiences, it continues to grow and triggers even greater responses. Peter Drucker once said that a company stays in business as long as it continues to make enough money to pay for its mistakes. One business consultant estimated that every 3 months a small business has a crisis that, if not responded to properly, can lead to the collapse of the enterprise. You and I are similar to small businesses in many respects. Fortunately, an inability to respond will not lead to something as final as a business collapse, but if for any reason we don't get on top of the challenges, but rather let them get on top of us, our self-esteem and self-confidence will go down, and our ability to deal with subsequent difficulties will diminish dramatically. As I've mentioned before, almost everything that happens to you is determined by your response to life. In your responses are contained everything you have learned and everything that you have become. Thomas Huxley said, "Experience is not what happens to a man, it is what a man does with what happens to him." Your life and everything about you is demonstrated in the way you react. It's not in what happens to you. This is why the Stanford study was quite clear when it stated that the proven ability to function in a crisis is the absolute prerequisite for promotion to a senior position. In a way, what we're really talking about here is character. One of the aims of your life should be to develop your character, to become a better and finer and stronger human being. But the development of character, although essential to your long-term happiness and well-being, is not as easy as it seems at first. You probably make every effort to organize your life in such a way that you minimize or remove the unexpected and usually unpleasant surprises that may occur. You use your intelligence, your education, and your experience to arrange your life and affairs so that you avoid adversity wherever and whenever possible. You probably plan and prepare exhaustively in advance to assure that things go smoothly both at home and at work. You are especially careful with your health and with the well-being of members of your family. Almost everyone does this, except for those who are thoughtless and irresponsible. Yet in spite of making every effort to avoid adversity, you experience adversity nonetheless. Adversity comes to you unbidden. You tend to be blindsided with adversity, and it befalls you in spite of your very best efforts to the contrary. But yet, in the absence of adversity, you cannot go and develop your character. You cannot become a better person. You cannot develop resilience, perseverance, and resoluteness of character. You cannot develop into the kind of person who enjoys high levels of self-confidence and a feeling that you can meet and master whatever you're faced with. You cannot grow stronger without adversity, which you consciously and deliberately avoid. You cannot develop the character which is the mark of the mature person. Caught in this conundrum, you have only one choice. You can choose in advance to be equal to the occasion. Ann Landers summed it up beautifully in these words. She said, If I were asked to give what I consider the single most useful bit of advice for all humanity, it would be this. Expect trouble as an inevitable part of life, and when it comes, hold your head high, look it squarely in the eye, and say, I will be bigger than you. You cannot defeat me. Frederick Robertson said, It is not the situation that makes the man, but the man who makes the situation. It is not what happens to you, but how you respond to what happens to you that determines your whole life. In this whole question of responses is contained all the elements of human greatness or depravity. Great men and women are simply those who have responded well when the chips were down, and the rest is history. Dr. Abraham Zelsnick of Harvard is one of the few people who has ever done extensive research into the subject of disappointment. What he found in studying the way that different people respond to disappointment was that you could largely tell how high and how far a person was going to go in life by simply analyzing how they reacted when they faced frustration and setbacks in reaching their goals. Dr. Zelsnick found that the great majority of people do not prepare mentally for the inevitable disappointments that come in life, and when they arrive, they tend to be taken off guard and emotionally overwhelmed. They generalize the disappointments and allow themselves to feel that because they have not succeeded, they are not really very good at what they do. They tend to see these disappointments as being indicative of their inabilities and lack of competence. They become easily disappointed in themselves, and they lose the courage and confidence that they need to press forward. Often, they become depressed, and in the majority of cases, they gradually give up. They stop setting goals and working on themselves and become more concerned about security and potential loss than about taking chances and potential gain. The winners in his study responded to disappointment very differently. First, they mentally prepared for a disappointment in advance so that when it arrived, they had already given some thought to how they would react and to the possible courses of action open to them. They looked upon a particular setback as very specific and not being indicative of a general lack of ability or of a character flaw. More than anything else, these superior men and women had developed a series of mental tools that they used almost automatically whenever things went wrong for them. Napoleon Bonaparte is considered by historians to have been perhaps the most brilliant battlefield general in human history. In a military career spanning 25 years and involving hundreds of battles, large and small, he lost only 3. Napoleon was famous for having taken the time to think through every possibility of the upcoming battle with no illusions and with an attitude that dealt with the worst possibilities and reverses that could occur. When the battle was underway and confusion reigned everywhere, a steady stream of messengers and officers would come to him with news, requesting instructions on what to do next. His responses were always clear, concise, and immediate. No matter what happened, he had an order and an answer at the tip of his tongue. And the reason for this, and what helped to make him the master of all of Europe, was because he had thought everything through in advance. This program on the science of self-confidence is meant to be very practical and helpful to you. In the next few minutes, I'm going to share with you some of the mental tools used by the most effective men and women in our society to cope with adversity. What I suggest you do is that you turn them over in your mind and review them regularly until they become an automatic part of your thought processes. And when they do, I promise you that you will have taken a giant step toward becoming unstoppable and toward enjoying the high levels of self-confidence that are possible for you. The first mental tool is to reassess your entire attitude toward the concept of failure. You know that the fear of failure is the greatest single obstacle to success and happiness in adult life. It's been learned, and as a result, it can be unlearned, thereby freeing you from the fears that hold you back and giving you the self-confidence that propels you forward. The starting point of eliminating this fear is for you to accept and realize that no success is possible without failure. All success is preceded by failure, usually great failure continued over a long period of time. Abraham Lincoln was considered one of the great failures of American politics, a man who had lost his business, lost his sweetheart, and was defeated for election over and over again. However, By learning from every temporary defeat, he won the final election and became one of the most important and respected presidents we've ever had. As Stanley Judd wrote, "Don't be afraid to fail. Don't waste energy trying to cover up failure. Learn from your failures and go on to the next challenge. It's okay to fail. If you're not failing, you're not growing. You only learn how to succeed by failing, and no success is possible without it." Thomas J. Watson was once visited by a young journalist who asked him how he could be more successful faster. Watson, the founder of IBM, replied with these wonderful words. He said, "Do you want to be successful? Then double your failure rate. Success lies on the far side of failure. Every man or woman of great achievement has been, at one time, a magnificent failure. The greatest successes of our generation and of our history books are merely stories of men and women who have failed often enough so that they finally learned how to succeed." On the David Susskind Show some years ago, they had four men who had all become entrepreneurial millionaires before the age of 35. They asked them during a break to add up and calculate the total number of different businesses that they had started or tried before they found the business where they made their fortunes. It turned out that the four men had started an average of 17 businesses each, an average of 16 of which had been unsuccessful. But it was the 17th business on average that had made them rich. Now, the obvious question is this: did those young men fail in each of their previous business enterprises? And the answer is clear. They were not failing. They were merely learning how to succeed. Their previous business enterprises were the testing grounds where they learned the lessons necessary to achieve the financial independence, which was their real goal. Thomas Edison was the most successful inventor of the 20th century, or of any century. But Thomas Edison was also an extraordinary failure as an inventor. He failed more times than any other inventor of his age. He failed thousands and thousands of times in attempting to find the proper filament for the first electric light bulb. He failed thousands of times more in attempting to find the proper plant from which to draw natural rubber. And in his laboratories at what is now known as General Electric, he brought together some of the finest scientific minds of the age so that they could dramatically increase the number of their failures. You see, Edison knew that success is a numbers game. It's based on intelligent effort and the law of averages. If you try enough different things in enough different ways and you learn from each trial, then you must inevitably be successful. The fear of failure, on the other hand, causes people to try fewer and fewer things, thereby lowering the likelihood that they will ever achieve anything of consequence. In the same year that Babe Ruth hit more home runs than any other batter in America, he also struck out more than any other batter. When the ball was thrown, he swung with every ounce of strength he had, often spinning around and falling down on the ground as a result of his efforts. But he also set an American baseball record that was not broken for decades, and he became a legend in his own time. Your job is not to fear failure or to so fastidiously avoid failure that you also avoid success. Your job is to move forward and take intelligent risks, thinking them through in advance and learning from everyone in retrospect. Zig Ziglar says that you can tell how high a building is going to go by how deep they build the foundation. The height to which you rise in life will always be determined by the depth of your own personal foundation, which is almost always the quality and quantity of your failures and what you have become as a result of them. Napoleon Hill wrote, "When defeat comes, accept it as a signal that your plans are not sound. Rebuild those plans and set sail once more toward your coveted goal." And Dale Carnegie wrote, "The successful man will profit from his mistakes and try again in a different way." The starting point of triumphing over adversity is to overcome the fear of failure to the point where you are willing to proceed boldly in the direction of your dreams. We said before that whatever your emotions, they control your decisions and everything you do. When you write down clear goals and make detailed plans for their accomplishment and think about your goals all the time, you build within yourself the white-hot heat of desire, which can eventually become so powerful that it overcomes any fear of failure that might hold you back. The more you think about your goals and talk about your goals and write out your goals on paper, the more determined you become to make them a reality, and the more likely it is that you will push yourself forward to overcome the petty fears that might hold you back. The second mental tool you can use to deal with adversity is called crisis anticipation, and it refers to your ability to think. Your mind is the most powerful tool that you have with which to apprehend reality. Everything you feel and all your reactions are initially determined by how you think about any subject. If you change the quality of your thinking, you change the quality of your life. And it begins by applying your ability to think to your existing situation. Crisis anticipation is the exercise of looking down the road, 6 to 12 months, and making a list of everything that could go wrong in the areas that are important to you. It's similar to what Napoleon did in anticipation of an upcoming battle. If you're in business, make a list of all the problems that might arise that could threaten the survival of your business. If you're in sales, make a list of all the things that could happen that could dramatically decrease your sales volume. With regard to your family, or even when considering a family vacation, make a list of all the unexpected events that could occur that would derail your plans and goals. In one business, with 11 salespeople, the owner found that more than 60% of the sales were coming from two of the salespeople. If one of those people quit, or worse, went to work for a competitor, the company's sales volume would decline dramatically and its ability to survive might even be threatened. Once the owner was clear about this, he immediately began an intensive sales training program for all his people. Simultaneously, he began recruiting and looking for better salespeople while making arrangements to encourage his poor performers to go elsewhere. Within 6 months, no single salesperson accounted for more than 15% of the business. And when it happened that one of his previous top salespeople did decide to leave, the business was able to absorb the temporary drop in productivity and continue to grow. What are the likely crises that might occur in your life? What if interest rates doubled or your business dropped by 50%? What if your best-selling products stop selling or your best customers stop buying? In what areas are you overly dependent on someone or something else for your continuing success? And what steps could you take, starting today, to guard against a crisis should it occur? You will be amazed at how much more self-confidence you have when you feel that you have thought through the critical areas of your life and made plans in case something goes wrong. The third mental tool that you can use to triumph over adversity and to keep your self-confidence high is to know how to deal with an unexpected disappointment, one step at a time. Let me explain. Whenever one of your cherished dreams blows up in your face or you hit a stone wall in the pursuit of one of your goals, there's a natural reaction process that you and everyone else goes through. When you can recognize this process in yourself, you will be better able to see it in others and better able to deal with it. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross refers to this process as the five stages of dealing with death. They are the same for dealing with the death of a dream, or a hope, or a goal, or even the death of your peace of mind from an unexpected source. The five stages seem to be identical. The first stage, when something goes completely wrong and you are confronted with an unexpected setback, similar to the death of a friend or relative, is denial. You simply refuse to face it. When a company is in trouble or a person's career is not going well, this is the most common reaction. In this first stage, you refuse to accept what has happened as a reality. You say something like, "I can't believe it," or you say, "That can't possibly have happened." You demand proof, and you immediately want to phone somebody or get information to verify what you've been told. The second stage, once you confirm that what has happened is an actual fact, is anger. Anger is triggered by a feeling of pain or fear, especially of uncertainty or of the unknown. The fact of losing a big customer and what that might mean to your bottom line immediately triggers anger and a tendency to lash out. You'll become angry at yourself and angry at the customer and angry at your competitor. This is why very often people blow up when they hear bad news. The third stage of dealing with a disappointment of any kind is blaming. As a result of childhood conditioning, it's almost an automatic response for us to look around for someone to blame when something goes wrong. We want to be able to point the finger at the person whose actions caused this setback. If we ourselves caused the problem, we'll blame our secretary, our friends, our family, we'll even shout at our children. But in any case, someone gets the blame. The fourth stage is usually depression, especially in the case of a death, but also in the case of any major loss. You have a tendency to feel depressed and a little hopeless. You feel like a victim. Your level of self-confidence plummets, and you feel, what's the use? If you're not careful, you will take a single setback or disappointment and generalize it to yourself as a person. You will feel that this setback signifies a major flaw in your personality or in your ability. The fifth stage of disappointment is when the lights begin to come back on. This is when you accept full responsibility for what has happened. At the very least, you accept responsibility for your responses, for the way you react to the situation. You begin to exert a certain amount of self-control and self-mastery. You accept the disappointment as a fact and decide that there's no use crying over spilt milk. You say to yourself something like, well, what cannot be cured must be endured. Once you've accepted responsibility and turned your eyes upward toward the future, toward what can be done rather than toward what has happened, you move to the final stage, and that is the stage of action. You consciously choose the future over the past. You become solution-oriented rather than problem-oriented. You begin to look for the valuable lesson you can learn from this situation. You begin to think how you can minimize the damages and maximize any opportunities that might arise out of this setback. Friedrich Nietzsche, the philosopher, is famous for having said, "What doesn't kill me makes me stronger." You know that the only antidote to negativity and worry and low self-esteem is positive, purposeful, constructive action in the direction of your goals. As soon as you get busy, your self-esteem and your self-confidence start to go up again. You start to feel more in control of your emotions and of your life. You stop making excuses and you start making progress. You start thinking about how you can turn this situation to your advantage. And the most important thing you can do in dealing with any setback is to deliberately move through the five stages as quickly as possible. In the final analysis, you triumph over adversity by having clear values, clear goals and plans, and complete control over your mind and your thinking. You win by resolving to persist, no matter what the odds, no matter what happens, until you succeed. You recognize that persistence is a form of courage. It is the courage to endure in the face of adversity and disappointment, and it is the quality which guarantees that ultimately you will be successful. Calvin Coolidge, President of the United States, summed this up when he wrote, "Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent." Persistence is self-discipline in action. Each time you exert the self-discipline to persist in the face of adversity and disappointment, your self-esteem goes up. By engaging in the action of persistence, you build up your resistance to taking the easy way out. You create the friction that comes from going against your natural tendencies. You generate the heat that crystallizes your character at a new, higher level. And with this higher level of persistence, self-discipline, and character, your self-esteem, self-respect, and personal pride go up. Your belief in yourself serves as a deep foundation of confidence upon which you build a great life. You become more positive, more optimistic, and more unstoppable in everything you do. And you do this because, as Churchill said, you never give up. Never, never give up. One of the most valuable exercises you can engage in accomplishing any goal, is to ask yourself, what is my limiting step? What is the one factor that determines how quickly I can achieve my goal, or whether I achieve it at all? The ability to identify your limiting step is one of the best demonstrations of your intelligence. And your capacity to eliminate this limiting step is one of the best demonstrations of your overall competence in achieving anything you want. In looking over everything that's been written or said about personal success, the conclusion I came to was that your level of self-confidence is probably the limiting step in everything you accomplish. As I've said throughout this course, when you have enough self-confidence, you will try almost anything. Because success is largely a matter of averages or probability, the more things you try, the more likely it is that you will achieve greatly. When you set more goals and try more things, engage in more activities, and explore more opportunities, your probabilities of ultimate success go up astronomically. And the only real limiting step that you might have is your level of self-confidence. When you reach the point where you believe in yourself absolutely, the barriers that exist in your external world will not stop you. As soon as you win the inner battle, the outer battle seems to take care of itself. The development of self-confidence has been the turning point in my own life. The reason I feel so strongly about this subject is because of what it has meant to me. The development of greater self-confidence has enabled me to go from rags to riches, from limited means and obscurity to national and even international renown, and from living in a small, rented one-bedroom apartment and being deeply in debt, to living in a beautiful home on a golf course and driving a new Mercedes. Talent and ambition have been very helpful, but without the development of self-confidence, my inborn abilities would have lain dormant and unused, as they did for many years. Before I gained enough self-confidence to make a difference, my background wasn't very exciting. I came from a home with three younger brothers, and while I was growing up, we never seemed to have very much money. My father was a good man, but he was not always employed and working, and I remember from my earliest days that we could never afford anything. I became a behavior problem at an early age. I see now, in looking back, that I was just rebelling against my upbringing, but at the time I was a real problem for everyone around me. I was constantly being kicked out of classes for misbehavior, and I was suspended or expelled from four schools during my junior high and high school years. I had the sorry distinction of being the worst-behaved kid in school, with more detentions, more demerits, and more failed classes than any other kid in the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grades. I began working at a young age. I worked at a part-time job and then full-time jobs to earn my own money and buy my own clothes and eventually get my own car. I worked as a dishwasher in a small hotel for 8 hours a day during my 12th grade year, and although I didn't drop out of high school, I failed out. I continued going to school until the year was over, but I failed 6 out of my last 7 courses. During the graduation ceremonies, they allowed me to go up on the stage in a gown in front of all the parents and receive a certificate from the principal. The person in front of me received a diploma, and the person in back of me also received a diploma, but what I got was a leaving certificate. A leaving certificate is a polite way for the school to say, goodbye, please don't ever come back. While many of my friends who had graduated from high school went on to university to complete their educations, I began working at laboring jobs. Over the next few years, I worked as a dishwasher and a kitchen helper. I worked in sawmills and factories. I worked on construction crews and as a laborer. When I was 23 years old, I worked as a farm laborer during the harvest. In one job, I dug wells, and that's where you start from the ground level and work down rather than up. In my mid-20s, I was still drifting, and in order to eat, I began selling office supplies from door to door. I did poorly. From there, I went to selling other things. I remember making calls for an entire month without selling a single thing. I lived on loans and charity from family and friends. I had virtually no possessions, very few clothes even, no money, no high school diploma, no marketable skills, and no experience of any real value to anyone. I was going nowhere fast. Meanwhile, all around me, I saw people my own age and younger who were doing well. They were moving onward and upward in their careers. They had offices, and some of them even had staffs. Several of them had gotten married and had homes and families and furniture and what appeared to be pretty good lives. My first turning point came when I realized that my problems at school and in getting along with other people were as a direct result of my own personality. I began to understand that my unhappiness and anger and frustration at my childhood experiences had caused me to develop a negative personality that turned many people off. The second turning point came for me when I realized that I was completely responsible for my life and for everything that happened to me from then on. If I wasn't happy with my income or my work or my education or my future prospects, it was up to me to go to work on myself and make the necessary changes. They wouldn't happen by themselves. The third turning point came for me when I discovered the importance of setting goals and of making clear decisions about what I really wanted in each area of my life. When I first stumbled across the subject of goals, I thought they were something that you had in football games. The idea of setting them for myself wasn't quite believable. Because I had low self-esteem and limited self-confidence, the first goals I set weren't very high. They were consistent with what we talked about in session 2 of this program, but I looked upon the exercise as more of an entertainment than as an important stepping stone to success. I remember sitting in someone else's cheap hotel room many years ago. I took out a piece of hotel stationery and wrote out a couple of goals and put deadlines on them and then made a simple plan for accomplishing them. I promptly lost the sheet of paper, but exactly 31 days later, just as I had written, and as the result of a remarkable series of coincidences, both my goals were achieved. I was in my 20s at the time, and I still remember the feeling of astonishment I had at that time. I felt that I had learned of a secret power that I could use to accomplish almost anything. Well, I had learned 3 success ideas. First, accept complete responsibility for yourself and for everything that you are and ever will be. Second, accept that you can change your situation only by going to work on yourself and learning the things you need to know to be better. And third, set clear goals with timelines for the things you want, and then go to work to bring those goals into reality. For the next few years, I used these ideas sporadically. Each time I did, I would experience a burst of success and progress. As soon as I achieved a modicum of success, I would abandon these ideas and go back to simply reacting and responding to whatever happened on a daily basis. It took me several years before I finally began practicing these ideas and many others that I've mentioned in this program on a regular basis, and I began to get results in a systematic and consistent way. I learned later that our natural tendency is to work very hard until we find a specific method or technique that works for us, whether in life or work or relationships, and then, for some perverse reason, we promptly abandon the technique and go back to behaving in our old way in a random and haphazard manner. And here's the point. I learned in retrospect that the reason why I suffered so many frustrations and why I drifted away from using these principles so often was because I lacked self-confidence. My conscious mind told me that these principles made sense, but my subconscious mind, my storehouse of memories and emotions and previous experiences, was telling me that I wasn't good enough and that success was not really for me. As my friend Zig Ziglar says, I was engineered for success, but programmed for failure. I wanted success on the outside, but I didn't really believe I was capable of it on the inside. The fourth turning point for me, and the reason that I've produced this program for you, was my discovery that I could develop any quality that I thought was necessary for my success and happiness. I learned that by hard work and repetition, I could overcome and override my feelings of inferiority and undeservingness and build up my feelings of self-esteem and self-confidence. I could identify and then alleviate my own bottlenecks or limiting steps. By going to work on myself systematically, I could build myself up into the high-achieving, happy person that I really wanted to be. By taking my foot off my own subconscious brakes and putting them onto my conscious accelerator, I could begin to move ahead rapidly in life. And the key, the spark plug, was the conscious and purposeful development and maintenance of high levels of self-confidence. Every successful man or woman that I've ever talked to or read about has come to pretty much the same conclusion. By every measure, you have more talent and ability than you can ever use in an entire lifetime. You too can step on the accelerator of your own potential and begin moving forward at a speed that will amaze you. So here's the question. How do you infuse your whole life with the kind of self-confidence that makes everything possible for you? Well, here are what I call the four D's, which underline success in anything you want to accomplish. The first D is desire. You must really want to become a totally self-confident human being. Your desire must become so intense that it overrides your fears of failure and rejection and inferiority, and it becomes the dominant emotion governing your behaviors. The second D is decision. You must make a do-or-die decision that you will go to work on yourself and keep at it until you achieve the kind of self-confidence that enables you to do and be and say whatever you want. The third D is determination. Once you have started to make significant changes in the way you act, your internal gyroscope will try to take over and bring you back into your comfort zone, into your old ways of acting. Sometimes progress will be slow, and often you'll see no progress at all. Nonetheless, you must persist in the positive and constructive behaviors that you know will lead to making you into the kind of person you wish to become. Your determination must be as unshakable as the self-confidence that you desire. The fourth D is discipline. Underlying and surrounding all great achievement in life is the quality of self-discipline. This is the ability to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. If you have the desire to change and the decisiveness to take action, the determination to persist on your forward track, and the discipline to make yourself do whatever you need to do, your self-confidence and your success are inevitable. We said earlier that self-confidence comes from positive knowing rather than from just positive thinking or hoping. It's only when you have a firm conviction or belief in your abilities based on experience that you really know that your self-confidence is not an act. This is why every act of self-confidence builds your self-confidence. Every success you experience builds your self-confidence and your ability to achieve further successes. Every mental exercise that you engage in to improve and strengthen your personality builds your self-confidence. And everything that you learn and practice from the lives of other self-confident people improves your own self-image, increases your own self-esteem, and raises your own self-confidence. In the mid-80s, the Gallup organization conducted one of the most exhaustive surveys into the reasons for success ever conducted in America. They selected 1,500 men and women whose names and biographies appeared in Marquis's Who's Who in America, the most prestigious register of noteworthy individuals in the country. They asked them, at great length, what they felt were the reasons why they had become so well-known and respected in their lifetimes. This group, by the way, included Nobel Prize winners, university presidents, heads of Fortune 500 corporations, leading academics, writers, inventors, entrepreneurs, and even a high school football coach who continued to have a significant impact on the lives and personalities of the young people he trained. After many months of research and interviews, they were able to isolate the five most important qualities for success and self-confidence in America. And their findings turned out to be consistent with virtually all the other research that's been done in this area. The first and most important quality of all is simply called common sense. Common sense was defined by the participants in this survey as the ability to cut to the core of a matter, to recognize and deal with the essential elements of a problem or a situation, rather than getting sidetracked by smaller issues or symptoms. Another definition of common sense was the ability to learn from experience and then to apply those lessons to subsequent experiences. Perhaps another word for common sense is wisdom. Aristotle once defined wisdom as an equal combination of experience plus reflection. You are far, far wiser than you know. In fact, based on your experience, you probably have the ability to be far more effective than you are just by applying what you've already learned. The problem for most people is they simply do not take enough time for reflection. Perhaps the two best questions I've ever heard for personal growth are these. After every experience, successful or unsuccessful, stop and do an instant replay of the experience, preferably on paper, and ask yourself, first, what did I do right? And second, what would I do differently? If you take a piece of paper and write at the top of the page, what did I do right? And then write down every single part of the experience that you did correctly, you will be accelerating your development of common sense. By analyzing your immediate past performance like the football players do on video, you will find yourself getting better at a rapid rate. The very fact that you take time to reflect will cause you to improve in the areas you pay attention to. When you ask, "What would I do differently?" you begin to see all kinds of possibilities for improvement. The wonderful thing about these two questions is that the answers to both are positive and constructive. And when you dwell on the positive, constructive parts of your performance, present and future, these parts sink deeper into your subconscious and program you to act in a manner consistent with that information the next time out. The second quality for success and self-confidence that came out of the study was that of expertise. Really successful, happy men and women are very good at what they do, and they know that they're very good. They have learned and practiced and reflected and gotten better and better until they're recognized by their peers as being among the very best in their fields. And this feeling of being the best is an absolute prerequisite for deep and lasting self-confidence. The third quality identified in the study was that of self-reliance. Men and women who are respected by others tend to look primarily to themselves for the answers to their questions and for the solutions to their problems. They are highly self-responsible individuals. They don't blame others or make excuses when things go wrong. They look upon themselves as the primary creative forces in their own lives. They volunteer for tough assignments, and they're willing to take charge when something needs to be done. The fourth success quality they discovered was that of intelligence. Intelligence seems to be a key requirement for success and self-confidence in any field. But when they looked at this subject, they found that intelligence was not necessarily measured in terms of IQ. Many of the most notable men and women alive today had done poorly in school. They had gotten low grades or no grades, and many of them had not completed university or even high school. In my estimation, intelligence is really a way of acting. If you act intelligently, you are smart. And if you act stupidly, you are stupid, irrespective of your IQ or your education. Now, what then is an intelligent way of acting? An intelligent way of acting is a way of acting that is consistent with the achievement of your own self-professed goals. Whenever you do something that moves you toward achieving a goal that is important to you, you are behaving intelligently. But whenever you engage in a behavior that moves you away from one of your goals, you're behaving stupidly. The world is full of people who are behaving stupidly hour by hour and day by day because they are doing things that are guaranteed to bring them the opposite results of what they say they really want. If you're in sales or business and you learn how to manage your time extremely well so that you get a lot done in the course of your working day, you're acting intelligently. If you do things that undermine your production or take you away from your goals, you're acting foolishly in terms of your own goals. And here's the key. Everything you do is either moving you toward one of your goals or moving you away from it. Nothing is neutral. Everything counts. Each act you engage in is either a positive act that goes on the positive side of your personal balance sheet, or it's a negative act that goes on the negative side of your personal balance sheet. A great life, as we said before, is simply a life that has far more marks on the positive side than it does on the negative side. With regard to self-confidence, every time you do something that is moving you in the direction of something that is important to you, you feel a little like a winner. And every time you don't do things that move you in that direction, you feel like a loser. And these behaviors are not only progressive, they are habitual. The more you engage in one behavior or the other, the easier and more repetitive that behavior becomes. The more you engage in winning behaviors, the more consistently you act and feel like a winner. The higher will be your self-confidence, and the greater will be your belief in yourself and in your goals. The final quality of success determined in the study was that of a result orientation. This just simply means that you know that you are capable of getting the results for which you are responsible. All highly respected men and women are recognized as being the kind of people who can get the job done, whatever it is. They are invariably a decisive, results-focused action people. They have a bias for action and a sense of urgency. One of the most intelligent things that you can do is to increase your ability to do the things and get the results that determine your success. The greater your results, the higher will be your self-confidence and self-esteem. You will be promoted more often and paid more money because you will be producing a higher quality and quantity of work. You will receive other job offers, and you will be immune to economic downturns because your services will be invaluable. By developing intense result orientation, you guarantee yourself a future of success and prosperity. I spoke earlier about the importance of selecting your values and organizing your entire life around what you believe to be right and good and true. As long as you know that you are living consistent with your highest principles, your self-confidence rests on an unshakable foundation. I've talked throughout about the importance of setting clear goals and deciding exactly what you want in every area of your life. You know that big, important, challenging goals, clearly defined, improve your overall self-concept and build your self-confidence. When you plan your work and work your plan and dedicate your energies to completing high-value tasks, you see yourself making rapid progress toward the attainment of your goals and your self-confidence goes up. Every time you resolve to go the extra mile, to do more than you're paid for, to put in more than you take out, and to go beyond what is expected of you in your job and in your relationships with others, you feel terrific about yourself. Your level of self-confidence increases, and you feel motivated to contribute even more of yourself to what you're doing. When you dedicate yourself to becoming better and better at performing the important tasks in your life, you feel an enhanced sense of mastery and competence. Your belief in yourself deepens, and your ability to get the results that are important to you increases. Your ongoing commitment to personal and professional development gives you a feeling of continuous growth. Whenever you feel yourself growing as a person, you feel internally motivated and energized to achieve even more. And the more you learn, the more you can learn. The more you develop yourself, the more capable you become of further development. As you see and feel your life getting better, you feel more positive and more in control of your own destiny. You like and respect yourself more, and your self-confidence increases. Any positive, constructive, and self-determined action that you take in the direction of your dreams improves your self-image and raises your self-confidence. When you keep your thoughts and your actions consistent with your highest aspirations and your most valued goals, you are progressively building the unshakable kind of self-confidence that enables you to accomplish almost anything. Talk to yourself positively all the time. Say to yourself, "I can do it. I can do it." Or say, "I feel healthy. I feel happy. I feel terrific." Create a positive, suggestive environment around yourself. Create clear mental pictures of the person you want to be and the things you want to do. Read books that expand your mind and increase your abilities. Listen to educational audio cassettes in your car. Get around positive people and get away from negative ones. Prior to every event of importance, mentally rehearse and see yourself performing at your very best in the upcoming situation. Recall and relive a previous excellent performance. Before falling asleep, think about the things you did right during the day and the things you're going to do better in the days to come. Soak your mind in positive images of you at your personal best. Whenever something happens that throws you off balance, stabilize yourself by thinking about your goals. Because of the law of substitution, you can only think one thought at a time, and if you think about your goals, your mind will instantly become positive again. Whenever you have the choice of doing what is fun and easy rather than what is hard but necessary, force yourself out of your comfort zone in the direction of your dreams. Consciously resist the temptation to go easy on yourself. Remember that the comfort zone is the great enemy of human performance and human potential. It is only in the area of challenge and risk where you force yourself just beyond what is comfortable and easy for you that the possibilities of success await. Each act of courage and boldness on your part not only builds additional courage and boldness, but it also builds your self-confidence. The more often you dare to go forward, even in the face of uncertainty, the more likely it is that this type of courageous behavior will become a habit for you. You will gradually act yourself into feeling unafraid in almost all situations. There will be nothing that you won't risk or try. You will develop such confidence in yourself that you absolutely believe in your ability to succeed, even against difficult odds. And because success is based on the law of averages, you will ultimately succeed, and succeed greatly. Be sure to take good care of yourself physically every hour and every day. If you're not happy with your physical appearance, go to work to improve it. Set a series of goals to be at your perfect weight and to wear the ideal clothes for you and to be perfectly groomed in every respect. Your self-confidence is strongly affected by your self-image. Your self-image, on the other hand, is largely determined by the way you think that other people see you. When you work hard on yourself and take the time to produce an image that you know is attractive to other people, you feel wonderful about yourself and your self-confidence goes straight up. The final key to self-confidence was put forth by Dorothea Brand in 1935 when she said, "The high road to success is to act as if it were impossible to fail, and it shall be." The real difference between the winners and losers in life is the difference between acting and non-acting. It's between the people who do and the people who talk about doing. It's between the movers and shakers and those who just watch the world go by. Perhaps your greatest responsibility to yourself is to become a person of action, to act yourself into feeling the emotions that are consistent with high performance. Your primary job is to make any effort, overcome any obstacle, and scale any height to become the dynamic, unstoppable, irresistibly self-confident person that you are capable of becoming. And when you have developed in yourself this fundamentally important quality of self-confidence, everything else will be possible for you.
We urge you to once again think about a question Brian posed in the first session of this program. And that is, what one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? If your answer, your one great thing, is the same now as when the question was first presented, do you still, with each listening, these principles will challenge you in a new and exciting way? You'll soon know, if you don't already, that yours is the power to make even the most daring of dreams a reality.